Hey devs, you're tuning into the Debug Log Number 4. Today's episode is pretty exciting in that we have the podcast's very first interview. Admittedly, we were a bit short-staffed, but the guys get to sit down with Travis Lacey, who is a freelance concept artist and worked as the art director for a game called Arrow's Quest, which was recently greenlit on Steam. We get to pick Travis's brain about all things art, Arrow's Quest, and the amazing journey that he and his partner had while getting the green light on Steam. We really enjoyed speaking with Travis and are already eager for his return. We hope that you guys enjoyed as much as we did. So, without further ado, this is the Debug Log, Episode 4.
Everybody gets nervous talking about themselves.
I'll be Zach and just sit in the background. Yeah.
Thanks for
like a boss.
Travis Lacey's here trolling Jedi's in the background.
See, you're trolling Zach. That's what the show is all about. You're listening to the Debug Log, a podcast about Unity game development. My name's Andrew Curry.
I'm Obino Parr.
I'm Zach Schneider.
We got a tight crew today, an original three-man crew today, because for the first time, we have a special edition of the podcast. A special guest has joined us, right, Obino?
Yes, we've got a special guest. Very excited today to be introducing and interviewing one of my friends that I've actually worked on a couple of projects with, indie projects with. His name is Travis Lacey, and he's a concept artist, indie game developer, owner of his own studios. So he's got a lot of experience, and I'm going to let him introduce himself or give himself a little bit of background about what he does. So, Travis, let's tell us a little about yourself.
And welcome.
And welcome. Welcome to the podcast.
Yes, welcome.
Well, as Obina said, I'm a concept artist. Currently do freelance concept art and work with various companies, various indie developers. Pretty much that sums it up, I'd say.
Cool. Yeah, so I mean, like I said, I've worked with Travis on a couple different projects, and both of them were like these crazy huge MMOs that we decided to do. One of which we kind of kicked rocks on that one. We were like, that's just way too big. But we rolled it, all that effort and all that talent into a new MMO, which is, I think, doing really well right now. I guess explain to our users. Our users are like a mix between, let me just let you know, Travis, between like beginners and, you know, expert level developers. So we kind of are bouncing between, you know, giving information, like, you know, kind of walking them through sometimes, and sometimes we kind of ignore, I guess, the specifics of some things. So I just want to, you know, if you can explain what a concept artist is, like, what is the role of a concept artist in game development?
Okay, well, you know, I find it interesting that artist is really used for it. I think that we're more concept designers, but our basic goal is to come up with the visual ideas for what something is going to be turned into via game, movie, product, whatever it is. So, you know, we do the step-by-step working with our clients or our bosses, our directors.
What kind of requirements do you get? Like, do they just say, we need spaceships or this kind of setting, or do you have kind of free reign at the beginning to do whatever you want to?
Well, that's actually one of the things I love about concept art, is you never know what you're going to get. If a company's working on a space title, sci-fi title, and they need ships, they'll come to you and, you know, they'll basically say, hey, we need some spaceships. So, it's up in the air on, like, what exactly they want for us. Sometimes clients come to you with references and they're like, you know, I really like ships like this. I'd like to see something like this. Or sometimes they're just like, you got no idea whatsoever. So you got to just put the thing down a scratch board and start seeing what they like. And
yeah, I used to be a web designer, and that was always the process even for that. You just like, show me some websites that you think are nice. And we'll go start there, because I can't start with the world. I need somewhere to narrow it down.
Yeah. Well, that's why I say too, like, I think it's slowly changing too. I've seen a lot more people posting up that they're like concept designers, but like, you do have to know a ton about art and everything, like, to really do it. But pretty much as a concept artist, you have to understand that like all your art or your work can be thrown out the window at any point. So right. you can make 20 different designs and you have four of them that you're like, these are super cool, I love these, like, I think the client's really gonna like them, and they're like, yeah, don't like those, let's hit the drawing board again. So yeah.
So what you're saying is you're a true artist then, right? Just throw it out the window. Nobody needs to see this.
I don't feel it. I'm not feeling
it's pure.
Well, that's why you got to have your own personal work. So then yeah. Sometimes you just like put it out there and be like, oh, I like that. That's mine.
Yeah. That's cool.
So it's interesting. Like, I'm wondering, like, you're talking about how you're doing a lot of freelance work with all these companies. Like, how did you get into that? How did you start doing freelance as opposed to, like, you know, getting on Craigslist or getting on Career Builder and saying, let me work for a studio? Like, what made you do freelance work?
Oh, well, I mean, you know, I do look for positions like in studios, but you know, I'm looking for something a little more particular. You know, working with you, for instance, on the projects we've worked on, like, I love the range that I get. You know, yeah. I was working with S2 Games, working on I did pre-production on Strife with them, and then I worked in house doing work on Heroes of New Earth, character work and stuff, and doing some art management and everything. And I loved it. I had a great time there, but it became very repetitive to me in the aspect that we were really only developing character work for a game that had already been completely worked out already. All the maps and everything were already done. So, you know, I wanted a bit more. And I loved the company, you know, all the people that I worked with. It was very great. I just discussed it with them, and, you know, I still do freelance work with them. I just wanted a bit more variety in the you know, tasks I was doing.
I got you.
So I decided to leave the company. I gave them huge, you know, fair notice and everything. And like I said, I still do freelance with them and everything. And just started basically taking on freelance. So, you know, I get the opportunity to work with many different projects, and it's always a surprise of what I'm going to be working on next.
So you like the world building aspect more than even just designing. Here's a part for your little, a little corner of your world. You kind of like conceiving with these indie projects from the beginning, like the whole kind of canon and mythology of, or at least visual aesthetic. That's okay.
I mean, I love all sides of what I get to do with that, with the designing side and stuff. Like, I love working with other designers and actually talking with them and trying to create the ideas that they're thinking and stuff. It's very fun and challenging. So yeah, I really dig it.
Yeah. So yeah, it kind of like highlights, or it's a good segue to like how you worked on Eero's Quest, which we've been talking about over Skype, and, you know, something that's been on our radars for a while now is just that project Eero's Quest that you did with SolarWeb NV, and which is crazy. You're talking about, you know, wanting that more variety and more range in what you did. Actually, let's talk a little bit about Eero's Quest before we jump into that. Could you explain what Eero's Quest is? And I guess, how did you get into this project? How did you get started with this?
Okay. Eero's Quest is a 2D side-scroller puzzle platformer. Basically, you play the role of the hero, Eero, and you're, you know, like the classic style of side-scrollers, you're trying to save his girlfriend from the evil villain. So really, level by level, additional obstacles, but a real challenge to get through. You have 50 seconds to try to complete each zone. And the game is a real challenge, I can say that.
I played Eero's Quest myself, they have like a demo on their website, and I played through it, and it's crazy. It's a huge world, like wonderfully designed, super, super hard to play. I love the puzzles in it, though.
Is it like a Metroidvania kind of thing, or is it more like a Super Meat Boy type thing?
I would say it leans more to the side of Super Meat Boy.
Yeah.
I mean, just in the aspect that it's challenging and you die a lot, you know?
Like, okay.
I would say that really is the... And I guess that it's in a side-scroller genre, so...
That's okay. Funny. And the deaths are hilarious. I mean, not hilarious, but it looks like... It reminds me of that Mortal Kombat, you know, gore system. It's, like, really gory. It's, like, the blood splashes on the screen.
It's a super good insight to what how Obina likes to play. Give me more gore.
It's definitely a laugh. Like, we wanted it to kind of have that absurd feeling because, like... You know, again, this goes into kind of the next thing that you asked, or I guess more of what I said earlier about having variation and things, you know. Anyways, this project I ran a very, very cartoony-ish style with, art-wise. So in the end, when your character explodes into this really gory blood that splashes on the screen, it's kind of like shocking, like, what did I just see?
Exactly. And it's crazy. The role you play with Eero's Quest, it wasn't, I mean, you're still doing the concept art, role playing that role, but you're also the, like, over it all. You're like the art director for the project. So you handled everything. When, Andrew was talking about having your own little section of the world, you were creating it and designing and building and imagining this whole world.
Yeah.
That's correct, right?
Yeah. I had to put the hat on for the entire art project. Solo Web Envy Studios had approached me about the prototype, and I had always thought it would be very cool to take on a project like that and do all the 2D art for an entire game like that. So it was a real undertaking.
How do you feel now?
I feel like it was a lot of work, but I learned so much about the indie side, developing on it, the hard work you have to put in, the surprises that come along with the project when you're just like, nailed that, and then all of a sudden later you're like, gotta get rid of that. So, there's a lot that comes to doing that. And, really in the end, it was just me and Ivano who runs Solo Web and Envy Studios. So it was just two guys basically sitting there every day talking back and forth, creating the project, which was pretty rad, but also kind of terrifying to think about taking on that whole project with just two guys part-time for a year.
Yeah, it's crazy. And Solo Web is based in Curacao, which I know Zach doesn't know this, but it's a little island north of Venezuela. So it's super far from where you are in Michigan. So I wonder, how did that remote, did you guys work remotely? Was he in the States when you guys were working on this project?
No, the only time that we actually had met face-to-face was when we featured Eero's Quest at PAX 2015.
Okay.
So everything between then was Skype calls. Jumping on Skype, messages back and forth. It actually worked out really well because, with me being able to create all the art assets and he's creating, all of the, or doing all the programming and everything, I was able to sit down and work whenever I had the time to do it. So sometimes I was drinking coffee up till 5 a.m. doing assets and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was the only time we actually met face to face.
Yeah, remote work is kind of like, it's crazy to me. Well, not crazy because I'm doing it with the project that we're working on, but it's crazy in concept when people are like so far apart, and especially on an indie project where you're not working from 8 to 5 every day, but you're communicating over Skype, like you said, over emails, over text messages when data rates apply or don't apply. So anyway, you communicate all this remotely. But you're able to get a project to completion and eventually, in the case of Eero's Quest, greenlit on Steam. Like, it's crazy. Like, how do you manage, how does someone manage that kind of project when it's just two, especially when it's just two people, like, managing so far apart? Well, like, what did you guys do to manage that kind of dynamic and managing the whole project and task and assigning task and getting things, deadlines and everything? How was that?
Lots of typing and conversation. I mean, we took it one step at a time, talk about what we needed to get done next, what was the most important thing to have next. Like, obviously you can start to develop the entire game with just one, parallaxing background, but, we'd sit there and discuss, like, what we thought good environment alterations would be, just really going at it and lots of testing, too, so.
I gotcha. Cool. One thing, speaking of Eero's Quest, I don't think we've mentioned how much it costs. It's $4.99 on Steam right now. You can get it and download it, as well as on PC and Mac. And I think, I read on your website that you guys were looking to move into mobile maybe for Eero's Quest.
We had thrown an idea back and forth that we think could be a pretty cool adaption for mobile down the line.
Cool. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that would be cool because, the way the gameplay is, it'll be something that's going to be really cool to play on mobile. I mean, because it's already, crazy fun on your PC and on the web, so I can imagine. So anyway, let's jump back to, I guess, that Steam greenlight and how you guys were officially greenlit on January the 8th. And what's crazy is that the process was actually rather quickly happened rather quickly for you guys after you guys originally, I guess, was it registered for Greenlight? Like, could you explain what Steam Greenlight is? And it's crazy because I'm probably like the only developer out there that doesn't have a Steam account. I know, it's crazy. I remember Ryan was like yelling at me when he heard I didn't have a Steam account. Oh, but yeah, could you explain what Greenlight is?
Because Venus apparently never heard of it. Yeah. So
Greenlight is the process in which you are basically getting your game onto Valve's Steam application. So there's quite a process to actually doing that. You have to get voted up. And there's a lot of sides to this that I still don't even know about with Steam Greenlight, is like how long you have to be on there, like what levels you have to reach until you're greenlit. Like, Steam does not reveal any of those things. But basically you have to have individuals, like people, players, come look at the green light and upvote that they want your game to be put on Steam because they would be interested in purchasing it. So the process of that, you know, for us was extremely nerve-wracking because we had already put, you know, a good solid 6 months into the project, developed a lot of things, and we were really, you know, trying to do what we could to get people to come to the Steam Greenlight and actually vote for it. We had actually made an entire HTML basic version, you know, nothing fancy of the game, which, as you said earlier, Obin, that's on the site. You can actually play a few levels on there. Because we thought that would help, you know, drive more traffic to the Steam Greenlight page. I know a lot of people, when they do Kickstarter games and stuff, they'll do their Steam Greenlight at the same time when there's a lot of eyes on and everything, but we didn't Kickstart, so we really had to go out there and work our butts off to try and get people to see the game and know what was happening.
What kind of steps did you do specifically to do that?
Well, obviously hitting every game forum that you can possibly think of, putting that out there. Twitter and Facebook, Twitter being absolutely major because of the hashtag abilities, was huge, you know, constantly posting things throughout the entire development process so that when we finally got to the Steam Greenlight page, people were already interested in our project and were, you know, helping us out, spreading the word out there. Jumping into Steam development groups, informing people that way. Making an awesome GIF. So yeah, let me just go into a little story of what we started off doing. Is we put the female character that you rescue in the game, like, she had this little twinkle in her eye as the GIF or whatever, and we put that up on our Steam Greenlight. And you know, at first we were like not seeing barely any traffic coming in and voting for our game. So we were like, you know, what's happening? Now, obviously, we hadn't jumped on like various forums and everything yet, but you know, there's tons of games that get Steam greenlit or trying to get Steam greenlit. So you're on there with tons of other people. So basically, we're sitting there and we're just trying to figure out what we should do to help, you know, bring some traffic in. And I was like, I'm gonna change that GIF and I'm gonna change it to Arrow, having him do this really cool like pose kind of thing, like looking angry, and then I'm just gonna put an explosion GIF behind that. And it worked great. Literally the next day, people started coming in and actually seeing it and voting for it. So
that is crazy.
If you're ever making a Steam Greenlight icon there, go ahead and use the GIF side and try and make a cool GIF with your green light.
Lessons learned. That's just cool.
That's a pro tip.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny because we were talking, and Andrew asked that question, and I remember going to your website and actually reading the dev blogs that you had on here. And it's crazy because me and Andrew were just talking about this today at Chipotle, which now I love. I used to not like Chipotle, which is crazy.
This
podcast
is brought to you by Chipotle.
Exactly.
No. Head down, say exactly. Obina, get a free Chipotle sandwich.
Yeah, free burritos.
That's too funny. But yeah, it's crazy just how, I guess, the importance of dev blogs and, you know, how helpful they are to understanding, like, you know, what another developer went through. And I mean, the podcast almost serves as like a, you know, quote unquote dev blog for developers, Unity developers, and like the issues that we've had as developers. And anyway, just getting that information out. And I just thought the dev blogs that you had on your website that talked about, you know, your process of, you know, getting Steam greenlit. I think one thing Ivano mentioned was like you started He mentioned the GIF thing, but he also mentioned this Groupie Greenlight bundle, and I've never heard of Groupie, like, because then again, I've never heard of Steam, so this is not surprising. So apparently it was like something, I don't know, do you know what that Groupie Greenlight bundle thing
actually,
did?
Yeah, actually that kind of slipped over my mind there. That was basically the process of being a part of a bundle with various other individuals that were trying to get their indie games greenlit as well. And the process behind it was actually whoever purchased the bundle for, I don't remember how much it cost. It was really cheap. Mm-hmm. But it basically was, if you purchase the bundle and go green or upvote any of the games that are on the project, it will... You'll get the game for free. You'll get a code for it when the actual process comes. Uh-huh. So it's like it allows people to basically go and check out a ton of games, and then for a low amount, they can basically pay to go over and greenlight the game so that they get the games down the line.
Yeah,
so it's kind of investing in Kickstarter in a way.
I got you. And then he was saying that he, like, on the dev blog, he was showing like how the spikes, the spikes as far as yes votes went up. Like when you did the Groupie thing, when you guys changed the GIF, and it was just cool to see like how these, you know, marketing strategies, you know, kind of turn your, I guess, your whole project or the projection go for the game around. So that was just really cool to read the dev blog and see how the process went. And it's a peek into how to do this. You know, if I was a developer and I wanted to get Steam greenlit. These are like some of the steps that you could take. So dev blogs are super helpful.
It's interesting on here that shows the, you guys talked about how you had like 9,500 yes votes, and that was a 54% yes vote ratio. So it is weird to think about what their actual algorithm is, because it's like, I mean, by most like standards, you're like, well, that barely made it over. But I don't think it's that. I think it's like the number of yes votes in a certain amount of time, I think. You know, if they, mm-hmm. you can get like a trend behind it, they're like, yeah, sure. That works out.
Yeah, it was really weird to see that whole process too, because we actually got Steam greenlit like super fast. Like I said, you can't sit around and just like not do anything. If you're not seeing that traffic is coming to your greenlit like page, if you care that much about the project, you got to go out there and get the traffic to come to your page.
Right.
So like, you know, it was weird for us to see that whole like, hey, all of a sudden there's lots of people seeing this and, you know, giving us the votes for it, and all of a sudden we were at number 4 out of 2,000 other individuals that were trying to get their games like also Steam greenlit. Mm-hmm. And then we sat there for 10-11 days at like number 4, and we were just like sitting there like, is there something wrong? Like, are they not going to like put us through, and like what's Steam doing on that side? Like, you know, is this ever going to happen? We're sitting pretty high up here. Like, but then like right when we started having that conversation of being like, we have no clue what's happening, the next day they put it through. So
that is amazing. Yeah, it's cool, man. Just what else did I see? It's just that, you know, when you're like you said, you're repping the game and you're putting that out there, and there's whole websites and forums like Who's Gaming Now posted about your game, and Ivano mentioned that, you know, that, you know, accumulated over 1,200 votes in a single day. It's crazy to see like the power of community, and like when you do things, and when you're marketing your game, and when you're putting your stuff out there like on Twitter and stuff, that, you know, when one person hears it and they can, you know, advertise it for you, like the impact it can have for your game. It's just, like you said, it's just really just marketing yourself and getting that out there.
I have a question. What, by the time it got greenlit on Steam, how, you said you've been working on it for 6 months, what percentage of the project was actually done?
40.
Okay. So was there like, it's like, oh, we got to do this now, you know, this pressure kicks in at that point.
I mean, we had already hashed out everything and like committed to the entirety of the project. But you know, it really hit us then. We got past a huge milestone. You know, we were working up to have enough content for the video, for people to actually see that the game, you know, was going to have various environment levels and everything like that. So, you know, it was a lot of work to get up to the point just to basically have something to show on the Steam Greenlight process so that people would be like, okay, this game looks like it would be something I would want to vote for, you know, to possibly purchase down the line.
Yeah, it must be. Yeah, it's got to be gratifying at that point too, because now you know you have an outlet. Like, yeah. You have a home that you're making it for, you know.
I got a shiny Steamworks developer
thing. Oh, that's cool. Nice.
Yeah. On my icon.
Yeah, so you've mentioned a couple of times about Kickstarter, and it kind of like triggered something in me. It's like, why not Kickstarter? Like, what makes you decide to not go the Kickstarter route, not go the crowdfunding route, and just do Steam? Like, what was the decision process in that? You know, because a lot of developers who are, you know, creating their games, like, oh, I'm just going to do this on Kickstarter, or I'm going to do this on Indiegogo, or, you know, they, that's like the one thing they know. Like, what makes you, you know, avoid Kickstarter and avoid those crowdfunding things?
Well, honestly, like, those are great. Those are absolutely great. But it was more of a decision that we had decided we wanted to commit to doing the project. So we didn't want to basically go and start developing it and put it up on Kickstarter and see, you know, our little work failed. We had said together, like, we're going to develop this game. We're going to make it. So we just committed to doing that instead of going on and putting it up for Kickstarter funding, which, don't get me wrong, that's an amazing, amazing helping point. Because, you know, it's a lot of time putting in all that work to develop a game. Having the funding behind you to do it is absolutely essential.
Yeah, most of the people that get swamped in those rewards and bonuses, it's like, unless you have some kind of infrastructure and people full-time doing that, it sometimes, unless it's a huge project and you really want to, it seems like it's not worth the trouble, at least on smaller projects, because it's just like, we can get just as much attention other places. If you get a few people, like you have a few outlets pick it up, then we're good. It's just the same amount of attention, you know.
Yeah.
I think.
Kickstarters are great too, because they're like, again, a big process like that, like working up towards the Steam Greenlight, you're doing that. It can be very beneficial for you to just do it for both, like go for the Kickstarter as well. Because like I said, the funding behind you is really awesome. But yeah, there's a lot that goes into setting up a Kickstarter too.
And fulfilling on that Kickstarter afterwards too. You're like, we gotta make this game, but we're printing t-shirts and
that's true. Yeah, the reward system.
Deals and getting all these shirts out to people.
It's like, are we a swag company or are we a game company?
Seriously.
What are we doing?
And I can imagine, like, with only two people on the project, that, you know, that burden would just, you know, like increase by
across
a crazy
the
amount.
World from each other too.
That's true too, yeah. So yeah, speaking of the other half to the company, you said you met him at PAX South for the first time. How was PAX South? I've never been myself, but this was in what, Texas this year or last year?
It was in San Antonio.
PAX South was in San Antonio this year, and
I only know because I had a ticket and I couldn't go.
What?
Oh, no.
Remember, I bought a pass because my cousin and my good friend, they live out there.
That's right.
We bought like Saturday passes, and then something last minute with my daughter, I was like, oh, I can't go, and it was too late to give it to anybody. And I was like, But how was it? Rub it in.
It was amazing for me because my entire life working as a concept artist and such, like I live up in Michigan, so you know I'm very much out of the central locations of like the major gaming areas or development areas. So for me, you know, it's like I've got other developer friends I've met out here and, you know, some of my friends and everything, but like that, you know, I don't get to really sit down and like talk to them about development and like, you know, really have that passionate, you know, conversation like you get with other developers and gamers and stuff. So being at that was just, it was overwhelming and awesome. And I had the best time. I would love to go to every single PAX if I had the money to go to every single PAX.
Was that your first a game conference ever?
Yeah, it was. I just was blown away being able to feature the game there, being able to talk to people about it, you know, like having people come play it and love it, or even the people that were like, you know, critiquing it. It was like, it was just great to have those people.
Yeah.
Oddly enough, we had some people find bugs and, you know, it was awesome. Some people were there to just play to try and break your game. We'd have other like developers from other games come over and they'd be doing things. And they'd be like, oh yeah, you can jump over this and jump off the map. And we're like, notes, write it down. Gotta make sure we fix that. But yeah, it was just so amazing. I don't know. I wish I could go to every single one, like I said.
Yeah, we had that same experience going to the Unity, the Unite conference last year. And it wasn't really an expo like PAX. It was just much more of a conference with talks. And they had both at PAX. But we had the same experience where it was the first. I've been to a lot of conferences for other like business kind of things, but never for just games. And my joke is you walk around, you hear people just talking about, you know, enemy pickups and collision detection. And you're like, what the? It's like, I'm among my people now.
Exactly. I'm in my zone.
I can only imagine. Like, and the first thing, after about an hour of being there, the only thing that I kept talking is like, I wish I had something to show. So I imagine it's such an awesome experience to be able to like kind of put a stake in the, you know, the corner of the expo and just like, no, this is my game, and just have people stop by and you just talk about your game. That's pretty cool.
I hang my exhibitor badge off of the light next to my computer now, so that every time I look up at it, I can just like smile and be like, okay, right, that's what I'm working for. It's like being able to be at those places with other individuals and talk to them. I've never talked so much in my life, honestly. I could barely speak on the flight home, which was funny because one of the guys I met like was from Gigantic, and he was on the same flight with me, and we were just talking back and forth the entire time home. I'm like, I'm so raspy, I can barely talk to you. making connections.
Man, that's crazy. Yeah, and I mean, just networking there would be so cool and so inspiring, just to see other developers, what they're working on, and seeing what they're doing differently or doing similar to you would be a really cool experience, because that's how it felt like Andrew was saying at Unite. It was just something that was really cool. You know, interfacing with these other developers and they're seeing their games and see what they're working on.
It was so exciting for me too, because the day before we had actually like started featuring, the entire floor was open for everyone that was dev or you know was in the
exhibitor
show. So we got to walk around and everything, and walked up and the guys that were running the Elite Dangerous booth had the Oculus Rift set up. They were like, hey, like, do you want to fly in space? And I was like, absolutely. Like, I haven't used one yet. And it was amazing. Just like, I knocked over the joystick because within 2 minutes, my brain had already registered like the hand moving in the game was mine. Something can knock the joystick over.
Yeah, that's where the Oculus, those are the best demos. And I haven't played Elite Dangerous with it, or I haven't played the Valkyrie, E-Valkyrie thing, but that sitting, I played a couple kind of low rent versions of that at home, and just the sitting in the cockpit ones are the best, because you don't have to do the weird awkward walking around, so it does feel, and you just sit in your chair and it's like, oh my goodness, this is neat.
This is amazing. I'm flying through space right now.
The moment you start doing like, this is going to be trouble when this comes out for people.
My brain just started thinking about Oculus VR after that so much.
So how did, like, so once you do that, you go to PAX, you promote the game. When the game, how was like the release, the schedule, or the release day? How was that was it crunch like heading into that, or did you guys get to set your own release date, or what? How did that go?
We had set a goal to try and like complete the game by spring, and we had told, you know, people in interviews that was our goal. But
is there a deadline with Greenlight? Do they say you have to do it within a year or something, or is there in they don't
honestly
care?
I don't know that side. As far as I knew, there wasn't. I believe you can develop your game as long as you need to, but I don't want to say that for certain. Everybody should look that up on their own. I can't say for guarantees.
Cool. So how were you guys stressful? Did you hit your original date that you set, or did you just...
Well, again, we shot for spring. We ended up going a little bit longer because we did some various testing and stuff and wanted to adjust some things and try and do that. And obviously, like any game, once you get it up on Steam then as well, you're also going to have to do some adjustments and changes, because that's when you actually get the mass traffic of people coming in and being like, I don't like this aspect of your game. You're like, okay, well, can we improve that? Like, can we go back in and rework so that it actually will be the best possible product that we can, you know, give the people what they want? So... yeah, you know, it was a stressful period of time. It's finally passed. We also decided to release before the big summer sale, so that was a very interesting thing, you know, like with all the AAA titles going on, so going so cheap, you know, it was a little lower via sales for there for a bit, but you know, we're sitting in the positive side, and you know, it's good.
Do you have any, like, from, I guess you kind of had two releases. You had the Greenlight release, you know, or that campaign, and then you had the actual release of the game. What's like the biggest lesson, like say the next game you guys release, or if you release it with somebody else, what would you kind of stress going into that release? Like any big lessons learned?
That's hard for me to really answer to that, because I feel like we were pretty comfortable on release the whole time. I don't feel like we really had some tough struggles that made us really like, oh no, we really like should never do that again. I mean, Ivano, who sadly is not with us right now, might be able to answer that in a different way. He did a lot of that and marketing side and stuff too, so
you just handled it like a boss. That's all right. That's all you gotta say.
Easy. So you said when Ivano first approached you, he had like everything together. It was like, how was there much game design work needed to be done after he approached you, or was it, you know, we really just need to create this world, create this atmosphere for Aero's Quest?
he had just come to me with a prototype with various, you know, sprites that he had just put in there as temp sprites to actually, like, you know, program the game. And he came to me with a very, very base, you know, idea, which was, you know, literally what our game kind of is based on, is like you run through as the character flipping nodes from red to green. And when you open all of those nodes, the cell opens up that the girlfriend's in, and you try and rescue her. So he came to me with that very basic prototype of that. And then from there, as we continued to design and make the game, we'd come up with the ideas like the power-ups and stuff that allowed you to, you know, move faster around the world. And then the ones that slowed all the enemies down, the time warp one and stealth one. So we actually started adding a lot more design features to the game to make the game even more enjoyable and varied and entertaining.
Very cool. Yeah, the game is really fun, and just to reiterate about, you know, the price for the game is $4.99 on Steam, and you can get it, again, on Steam, PC, and Mac, or you can just go to the website, you can download it directly there.
So is there a sequel in the works? Or we can't reveal anything?
I mean, we've literally, you know, just completed the project, so
you're in that burnt out space.
I think if anything, if we continue down the route here, we're gonna probably attempt the mobile,
you'll be really burned out.
Something happen, you know, in the future, but at the current moment, we haven't really discussed it. So
cool,
gotcha.
And of course, very you continue cool. to work with Urbina.
Yes,
which we advise against, but I don't. we have to work with him, but you don't. You have a choice. I'm just kidding.
Oh, he's
great. Obina's great. I'm just kidding.
Obina's great.
Cool. Yeah. Me and Travis have been talking on and off about even because actually I saw on one of your interviews at PAX South that you had this notebook full of ideas, and I can attest to that because in Skype he's like constantly saying, you know, Obina, we should work on this. We should work on this cool idea, and they're like really great ideas too. So. I'm pretty sure you're going to have a project, you know, right around the corner that's going to be amazing that we'll be dying to hear about.
Currently waiting for a friend of mine who's moving back into town soon that I used to work with. And when he gets back into town, we're going to sit down and start hashing out a big idea that we've had for a little while. So I know future projects are coming my way. But, you know, I mean, I'm always out there looking for work and stuff like that, too. So never know what will happen in the future. But that's the life of indie dev and freelance. So
exactly, that's really cool. Well, yeah, just can we get like I guess the listeners want to know, like, how can I get in touch with Travis?
Yeah,
like,
you this just said you're artist. Looking for work.
Exactly.
How can they get in touch with you?
And see
you can go to my website, www.ravenseyestudios.com. You can contact me at tlaceyravenseyestudios@gmail.com to get a, you know, a direct contact. You can find me on ArtStation, DeviantArt. There's various things out there. My blog is a place that I consistently post on, and I think Obina is going to. Did you say you were going to put some of those in the?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll definitely add those to the show notes. So that way, you know, when there people are listening, they can just pop down to our show notes and see your blog, your DeviantArt, etc., ArtStation, and his concept art is amazing, of course, because you know we have him working on our project and we just love everything he's given us. So if you are looking for a concept artist or art director, this guy has a lot of experience, a lot of talent. So definitely get in touch. Check the show notes.
Appreciate that.
Cool, man. Well, we can't thank you enough for coming on, you're the inaugural interview, so you have to come back after like 100 episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm your dollar bill.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right, yeah. Thanks again, Travis. Anything else that you guys wanted to talk about or pick his brain about before we get out of here?
That's it, I think. If anybody has questions, they can send them to Travis, or if you want to send them to thedebuglog@gmail.com, and we can forward those to him and get them. So.
Absolutely.
Cool. All right, man. Thank you.
Thanks again, Travis.
Yes, man.
Absolutely. Pleasure.
All right, before we go, it's that special time.
Game of the week.
Game of the week.
This is going to get so annoying to our listeners. How many ways can you guys say this?
This is like a morning zoo thing at this point. All right, this week's game of the week is the newly released, after E3, Bethesda had a big conference for the first time, and they talked about Fallout 4, and that got everybody excited. But then they also dropped like one of those bombs where they said, we also have a, for the first time ever, we have a app just for iOS at first. Mm-hmm. And it is called Fallout Shelter, and it's available when they did the conference now, and it's free. So, and you guys really kind of like jumped onto this. I downloaded that day, but
And it's crazy because I never had played any of the Fallouts, but now after playing this Fallout Shelter on my iOS, on my iPhone, I'm definitely wanting to play. I want to play the new Fallout games.
It worked.
It did a really good job.
Right? You got me. And I mean, let me not say that. I was about to say, I rarely play games, but...
Well, this is the honesty.
Honesty coming out. I rarely play, because, I mean, I feel like I'm so busy. This is my excuse. I'm so busy, like, creating games. I don't play very many games. That's no excuse. It really isn't, because, I mean, that is our case study as developers. They're playing other games and seeing what works and what doesn't. Anyway, enough of that sob story. Back to Fallout Shelter.
As you guys were saying, it really does get you to really want to play the bigger game. In fact, right after I was playing this for about 2 days, I downloaded Fallout New Vegas and was playing that on my computer. And, I mean, I've already beat that game like 4 or 5 times, and I went back and started playing it again.
Easy peasy.
Yeah, easy. Somebody explain how does the game work? What type of game is it?
Zach should explain it, because Zach is like, he's cracked the code, if you will, of that game.
I'm not quite sure how to explain it. Would you call it more of a simulation? Or?
Yeah,
it's like a simulation.
It's a sim management. It's a management simulator. Yeah. That's
so
what it is.
A vault management system. How about that?
Simulator.
So you attempt to build your vault population.
You give him the word. You give him the exact word, and he goes, okay,
line, please.
Thanks, guys. I really needed it.
Oh,
I was
struggling
for words.
All right. Sorry, Zach. All yours.
Go ahead.
So you attempt to build your population in your vault, and while, I guess, not overextending yourself and building... building new rooms, so it's based off of your dweller's skills. So you want to get collect power, food, and water. And each of there's 3 specific rooms that do this. More eventually, you unlock more rooms that do, I guess, return you a greater quantity of power or water or food later. But each of these rooms. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you're just trying to keep your dwellers happy. He said he mentioned dwellers, but you have dwellers that come to your vault occasionally, and there's actually upgrades that eventually allow you to, you know, attract more dwellers to your vault. But basically, you're just trying to sustain your vault and to sustain the dwellers in there by raising their happiness. So there's like a lot of different stats you can look at. It's called special stats. So it's like strength, and P is for perception, E is for endurance, and there's like a whole bunch of stats that you want to maintain, and you use those stats to assign vault different dwellers to different like areas in your vault. So
right, so like power requires strength, perception is for water reclamation or water treatment facility, and then agility is for food, which I'm not sure why, but it is. And then I think there's also one for intelligence, which is actually 2 of them. I think it's the health packs and the raid, rad, what are they called?
Radaway or something?
Yeah, so Raidaway.
Not Raidaway.
Yeah. Rad. It's rads.
Radaway. Just rads. So you attempt to assign the dwellers at the beginning to the right rooms, and in order to increase productivity in those areas. And also, later you unlock different rooms that will help you increase the stats of your dwellers. So then you can further your productivity in those areas.
Yeah.
Yeah, you guys are obsessed with it. I played it for like 2 hours, and I was like, this is going to be more of the same after going to get more and more stress. Some of these games don't ever get me. If I like it, and I really, but once I get the mechanic, I'm like done with it.
Yeah,
at a certain point.
That reminds me, because this is like how I got started with this Fallout Shelter. I was like, okay, I'm just going to build maybe 1 or 2 of each thing, and then I'm going to be done with it, because I don't see much more to it. But it's almost like that cookie cooking game, you know, that little clicker or cookie clicker web game. And I was like, I'm just going to, you know, buy one of each of the first ones, and then I'll never play this again. but it got me hooked so, you know, so intensely. It's crazy. So I think it kind of had the exact same effect on me. It's just, you know, something simple, but it's still entertaining.
Yeah, I like it. And it's such a what's so kind of striking about it is the, I love the 3D little, the cubbies, the vaults, the little rooms of the vaults, and how there's the parallaxing and
that's really
perspective.
Cool.
It's like, it's so striking, but then has the kind of the Fallout, the Pip-Boy style, you know, people, mm-hmm. the cartoon style, and it works so well. The art direction's so neat, I think. That's what kind of caught my attention at first.
Another good thing they do is they sell, they have in-game purchases or in-app purchases that are like basically little lunch boxes. These lunch boxes have cards in them. And so it basically gives you a random roll for items in the game or elements in the game. So either power or caps, which is your currency. But you can also get special weapons and special dwellers in some of the more rare cases.
It's a pretty consumer friendly system because there's no paywalls in there, and there's no pay to win. I guess you could buy more and more stuff, but there's no guarantee that it'd help you at all. And there's no when I started playing and those guys were playing, I was like, can we compare scores? Or it's like, well, there's no real scores or anything. It's just making the game, so there's no pay to win either. It's just whether you want to buy that new, you know, loot, you can go right ahead.
And that, I think that's where some of the draw is, at least for me. You get that they have a one of the pages on the side that shows you the things you've collected, and most of them are like grayed out. So you want to, you know, maybe collect them all, bring some Pokemon.
Gotta catch them all.
Yeah, well, it's cool. Yeah, and that was one that we just actually enjoyed, and then we actually saw that it was in Unity videos. Like, oh, it's made in Unity. Okay, well, that's like the best. That's actually the best case scenario, because a lot of times we look for games on the Unity site that, oh, we played that game. That was in Unity. Cool. But this is one we were enjoying actually right now. Everybody's still playing it. But it was a surprise to know that it's in Unity. So
yeah,
it's a perfect example. All right, well, until next time, you can reach out to us and email us at thedebuglog@gmail.com. You can catch our website, where we're going to have postings of the episodes and the show notes and other kinds of things. And we talked about tutorials we're going to start having in the near future. And you can find more about that on our website at thedebuglog.com. And there you'll find links to all our Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff. We don't need to mention it right now. But I think that's it.
That is a wrap.
So we want to thank Travis again for coming on the show. That was a really good interview, and that was a good first interview to do.
I agree.
And Zach will talk more in the next interview.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm thinking about it.
He was so scared.
I was just so intimidated by you guys.
All right. Well, anyways, until next time, my name's Andrew.
I'm Obina.
I'm Zach.
I think we lost Ryan.
And that's it. He fell asleep.
Well, that's Ryan. We'll see you next time.
All right. Bye.
't hear you though.
Did you say something?
Maybe it's on mute.
Yeah, we didn't hear anything. He's like, why do they keep talking over me? Oh yeah, it's true. That's funny. Are you stopping the recording?